Hey there, everyone, and welcome to Who Wars, episode number 32. You know, we really are the audio fanzine for those among us who just can't decide between Star Wars and Doctor Who, although on this occasion, I've got to say to the Star Wars fans, I'm really sorry, this is a special sort of episode that is only talking about Doctor Who, so... oh, they've gone. I'm just kidding. I know many of our listeners enjoy both Star Wars and Doctor Who, and you're still listening to us. Although, that being said, it is part and parcel of running a Star Wars and Doctor Who hybrid podcast at times that some people are really, really, really into the Star Wars side of things or really, really, really into the Doctor Who side of things. And when you start talking about the other IP, they do tend to tune out. But that's, as I say, that's part and parcel of what we do here. We try and have a point of differentiation to other podcasts out there, and that's just part of how it goes. Anyway, I'm rambling, aren't I? How did this episode come about? Why are we here on our off week putting out episode number 32? Well, it's very, very simple. Lex and I sat down to discuss our three favourite stories from the 11th Doctor era. Basically, I said to her, you pick your three, I'll pick my three, and hopefully they'll be different, and we'll discuss, you know, six episodes or so. In the end, we ended up discussing eight, but that's something you'll hear when you get to the episode itself. Basically, I looked at what I was producing, and even halfway through, I thought to myself, this is going to be very, very long, and indeed, it's over an hour in itself, and I thought, this won't sit very well in episode number 32, which is the episode we were planning for next Sunday, and I thought, you know, the simplest thing may be just to pop this out as its own special episode today, and next Sunday, we'll pop out episode number 33. And everyone wins. Everyone's happy. Well, except for the Star Wars fans who have already tuned out. Again, I joke. Alrighty. Now, look, I've done a little intro to the piece because, again, I produced this as something that was going to sit in the next episode of Who Wars. So that will explain what we're doing. But before I go, I just want to say, with regard to Matt Smith, you know, Matt Smith was announced as the 11th Doctor on the... well, I don't know the exact date, but it was in January of 2009. I certainly remember that. And that gave us a whole year to think about Matt Smith in the role before he appeared at the very end of David Tennant's final episode. And to be quite honest, I thought he may be too young for the role. I wondered what they were doing. I wanted an older Doctor at the time, which I've got now in the form of Peter Capaldi, so that's all good. And I was worried, which is weird, because I do like the Peter Davison Doctor a lot. He is my Doctor, and he previously was the youngest man to take the role, so I shouldn't have worried, but I did. And in the end, Matt Smith proved me wrong and proved a lot of people wrong, people who were really not into the idea of him being the Doctor. He won them over. And I just want to play a bit of audio now before we get to the piece itself. This is a piece of audio that didn't make it into what I was recording with Lex, but it's such a beautiful little speech, a beautiful little collection of words. It's one of my favourite things from Doctor Who in general, not just the 11th Doctor era, but Doctor Who overall. This is one of my favourite little moments, and it almost makes me tear up every time I see it. So thankfully this is a podcast and you won't see that. Enjoy the audio, and then enjoy the feature that Lex and I put together. We had a lot of fun doing it, and I think in the future I'd like to sit down with Kate to talk about the 10th Doctor, and perhaps Andy might want to talk about the 4th Doctor or someone like that, and so on and so forth. So, strap yourselves in, enjoy, and I'll see you all in a week's time in episode number 33.
When you wake up, you'll have a mum and dad.
And you won't even remember me. Well, you'll remember me a little. There'll be a story in your head. That's okay. We're all stories in the end. Just make it a good one, eh? Because it was, you know.
It was the best. The daft old man who stole a magic box and ran away. Did I ever tell you that I stole it? Well, I borrowed it. I was always going to take it back. Oh, that box. Amy. Your dream about that box. He'll never leave you. big and little at the same time. Brand new and ancient and the bluest blue ever. And the times we had, eh? Would have had. Ever. In your dreams, they'll still be there. The Doctor and Amy Pond. And the days that never came.
You know, on the Who Wars team, we have some members who are very definite about their favourite Doctor. Kate is all about the 10th Doctor, for example, and Lex is all about the 11th. I'm all about the 5th, and on it goes. And I was sitting here the other day thinking, you know, it might be fun if I start to sit down with people who have a particularly favourite Doctor and ask them what their top three stories from that Doctor's era are. And I'll come along armed with my top three stories and we'll see if they correlate. And whether they do or not, we'll have a fun time talking about the episodes in general. So to kick this idea off, I've sat down with Lex all the way over in New York City on a cool Saturday night to talk to me here on a chilly Sunday morning in Sydney. And I hope you like the results. We certainly had a lot of fun making this. Enjoy. So okay. Hi. Oh.
Not a word from me. Go ahead.
So, hi, Lex.
Hello.
How you been?
Great. How have you been?
I've been very well. I love when we get to talk like this. It's so interactive.
Yes, it is. It's fantastic. So, we're going to play an exciting game today.
We are going to play an exciting game, which I call the 11th Doctor game. I just made that up.
Is that the name? Because I was about to ask, what is the name of the game?
It's the 11th Doctor game. So, basically, we've selected three Matt Smith stories that we love, and I have no idea what you've selected, and you have no idea what I've selected. Is that correct?
Well, I have a pretty good guess on one of them.
Interesting. Okay. You'll have to explain that if it comes up. We'll introduce one at a time, and if we've both picked the same story, we can say bingo or, you know, Geronimo or some other word like that, and we'll probably talk a little more about that one as we both, you know, have a bit to say about it. And all up, I'd say we're looking at a minimum of three stories, obviously, if we both pick the same ones, or a maximum of six.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to go first, or will I?
I guess I'll go first.
Okay.
In order of the series? Does that matter? Yes, okay. Well, my first one. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Series 5, 11th Hour.
Okay. Well, what can we say about that?
Well, first, I would have expected, how about bingo?
Nope.
Snap?
Nope. No bingo. Nope.
Oh, that was the one I could have... I was so sure you were going to do that one.
No.
It's the best. It's... Oh, okay. All right. Fine. Look, so, okay. Now I just guess why it's my favorite. My number one. I can't believe you didn't choose it.
Please, tell me about it. Tell me why you chose it.
It's the best first appearance of a new doctor that I've ever seen.
I would agree.
Okay, good. Less insulted.
No, I agree. Completely agree. It is absolutely the best for a new doctor. Ever. I'll go with that.
I suppose I should be a little less sensitive for the rest of this game. I'll get used to it. Yeah. It is the best. It's the best I've seen yet. And what is it? I think the overall, there's such a magical feel about it all. Matt Smith, and you know, this game is, we're talking about Matt Smith episodes, and Matt Smith is magic in this episode. True, he definitely develops into, I don't know, a different version of the Doctor. Some would say a drastically different version of the Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I would say he definitely incorporates, like, Patrick Troughton-y stuff later on in the other episodes that I'm going to choose later, especially. But in this case, it really is something special in this episode, the way he portrays the Doctor. Magic. He glows.
Yeah, the whole first series, he's sort of feeling out, I think, where he wants his Doctor to be. And I find that quite interesting. In fact, his first series is probably my favourite Matt Smith series.
Oh, me too. Yeah, definitely. The first series, 5, is probably the most dense material of all the best episodes, I think. Everyone.
So where were you when you saw this? Had you been watching the Tenet episodes and you were coming into this, you know, on a... what would you call it? On a buzz from, you know, Tenet leaving and his big ending? Or was this where you started with Doctor Who?
It was practically where I started with Doctor Who. My cousin got me into Doctor Who, and I was seeing snippets of it for maybe like a year or two beforehand, little bits at a time whenever I'd see her. And the 11th hour was one she was particularly just totally enthralled with, I guess. She's really great at telling stories. She told me all about the 11th hour, did Matt Smith impressions about the apple, and it got me hooked. So I had that first maybe inoculation. It was in my system. It is basically where I started off with Doctor Who. I wasn't coming from David Tennant. So when I very seriously got into Doctor Who, of course, I started at the beginning and watched it all the way through. And by the time that I had finished to David Tennant's, the last episode of David Tennant, I don't know, it just kind of went right back into that former first interaction, I guess, the Doctor Who world that she introduced me to. It wasn't so much of, I didn't have that comparison of David Tennant versus Matt Smith that everybody else had. I was automatically already on Matt Smith.
Yeah, and it's a good jumping on point in general, because there's no companions carrying over. It is a really fresh start for the series, so that might have helped as well for your jumping on.
Oh, absolutely. It's a really easy jump. It's an easy jump, just smooth right into the car seat, and you can drive along to the rest of the Doctor Who episodes very comfortably, you know? Smooth transition.
For sure. And
that was a James Bond image I had in my mind, jumping into the car scene, just driving.
That's a good image. Yeah, I like that. Look, for me, I remember I'd obviously been watching all the way through, and so I was keen to see what Matt Smith would be like. And I think he just nailed it, and I think the story was great. I mean, it's fairly simple. You know, the monster isn't that interesting. It doesn't really have a big plan or anything. You know, it's just sort of there. The crack in the wall is a very interesting thing. Obviously, that becomes quite a thing. But just as a showcase for the new Doctor and how he behaves. And, you know, something he did in that episode, which comes to me right now, which I wished had continued. He gets in that, is it a fire truck or a rescue vehicle? And he says, I've commandeered a vehicle. And I wish that had become more of a thing, you know, that he was always stealing cars or something.
Oh, yeah, that would have been a wonderful trope to follow up on. Yeah,
because I love that moment. I would have loved to have seen that followed up on, but no.
Yeah, I've commandeered a vehicle. That's so great. There are problems with the 11th hour, of course, as always. There are always some like minor technicality problems in a lot of the stories, but like the Atraxi, for instance. How did the Prisoner Zero know about the silence? That's always bothered me. That he came through a crack, one of these things that are supposed to like that touch universes together, and somehow he knows all about the silence. That's always kind of me.
You've got me. I had no idea. If there's anyone out there who knows, answers on a postcard, please.
Right. Yeah. Always. So I guess that pretty much concludes it. Just the magic and, I don't know, sort of the fairy tale, or maybe it's also kind of a campy, like there's a lot of flashlight use and adventures during the night with monsters in the dark, that kind of stuff. It's just, it's really easy to get into sort of it takes you back to your childhood fairy tale world that you might have had. I don't know. I certainly had it. Anyways, I think I'm done with the 11th hour.
Yeah. Oh, look, it's the madman landing in your back garden. It's, you know, it's nighttime. She's alone. There's no parents around. It's every kid's sort of dream. So, yeah, perfect.
And, of course, all the crazy goofiness.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff in that episode, that's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so that's my solid first number one choice. Your turn.
Alrighty, and I was going to say, look, very solid. I could have easily picked that one. I do have a runner-up that I'll mention when we get into Series 6 stories. But it wasn't even the 11th hour, which goes to show that there are some good Matt Smith stories out there.
Oh, too many. Too many.
What's your name?
Amelia Pond.
Oh, that's a brilliant name. Amelia Pond. Like a name in a fairy tale. Oh, in Scotland, Amelia.
No, I had to move to England. It's rubbish.
So what about your mum and dad, then? They're upstairs. I thought we'd have woken them by now.
Don't have a mum and dad. Just an aunt.
I don't even have an aunt.
You're lucky.
I know. So your aunt? Where's she?
She's out.
And she left you all alone?
Not scared.
Of course you're not. You're not scared of anything. Box falls out of the sky, man falls out of the box, man eats fish custard. And look at you. Just sitting there. So you know what I think?
What?
Must be out of a scary crack in your wall.
All right, my first story from Series 5 is Amy's Choice.
Oh.
Have I got a bingo?
No.
No.
No. That episode is a very good one.
Mm-hmm.
The way it's written, I like it. I don't know. Why did you pick it? Was it more Smith or the storyline, the writing?
Oh, there's so many elements to it. I mean, I love this whole idea of what is real and what is a dream in it. You know, I love stuff like that in regular movies and TV, you know,
yeah.
And there's that very real sense of what is real, what is a dream. I mean, we get the sense that the Rory with the ponytail and the mad pensioners in the village that they're, you know, fighting like they're zombies, we get the sense that that's probably not reality, but you always think, but is there a twist on this?
Yeah, what? The cool Twilight Zone effect.
Mm-hmm. So I spent the whole episode pretty sure I knew what was going on, but still with that feeling in your gut that, it might not be this.
Yeah, it very easily instilled in you this sense of eeriness, of not being certain of what's true, what's real. It was there.
Mm.
It was very potent. Mm. Good writing.
Oh, absolutely. And then you have the Dream Lord. You know, who is such an interesting character on multiple levels. You know, I was sitting there thinking, is this the Valiard from Trial of a Time Lord? I'm sure I wasn't the only person thinking that. And essentially, it was a very similar concept to the Valiard, like it was the darker side of the Doctor embodied in a person.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was.
And we through that, we get this, and the viewers, particularly new viewers, I think, get this sense that the Doctor has this strange opinion of himself. He does have his dark side and his dark moments and might not think well of himself at times. Yeah. And that sort of comes out in the Dream Lord. It's like, ooh, there's some layers to the character. You know,
yeah.
Particularly if you're new to the Doctor, he's not just one-dimensional hero type character.
Yeah, actually, I guess I kind of glanced over that one. I've been watching that episode. I've watched it more than once, a couple of times, and for some reason I just never paid attention to that psychological insight into who the Doctor is and how he might see himself. This is actually, it's pretty, I don't know, that's dark. It's surprising. Very surprising. The Doctor isn't entirely, I don't know, healthy. I would have thought he's just a lot more secure and, I don't know, not secure, but like stable-minded in this, how we see him of being, I don't know, more comfortable with being a good straight guy and not screwing around in people's heads like he does in that episode.
Well, I think it's like when we have friends at school or when we have colleagues at work, they might seem quite normal and friendly and fun to us, but really they're holding down some big emotions because, you know, their cat's just died or their partner's just got cancer or, you know, and you never know about it.
Yeah.
But if you had a way of having an insight into their life, you might see that there are darker times that you don't normally see because you don't have the sort of interactions that bring those out. So, you know, that's sort of how I see it. The Doctor does have a lot of turmoil and trouble and worry, and he's lived for so long. I mean, that's got to do strange things to your head. But he sort of holds it down and suppresses it most of the time and just puts on this veneer of, you know, friendliness. And I think he is genuinely friendly, don't get me wrong. I don't think he's a psychopath or anything in the making, but...
Well, hopefully not. Oh, God, that's the doctor
with
me.
Yeah, we've had the Colin Baker doctor, so we'll... we can move on from that. But yeah, I think he's like the colleague at work who always smiles and is happy to you, but when they go home, they might have all sorts of trouble in their life.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose I should have appreciated more in the past. I will now. I appreciate this for my general Doctor Who fanship, if that's it.
And I don't know if I mentioned this earlier when I was just rattling on about the stuff I liked in the episode, but there's comedy in this episode as well. I mean, there's the dark stuff with the Doctor being dark, with the fact that the Doctor and Amy are sitting in that van, let's just ram it into this house and kill ourselves because that's the way to get out of this. I mean, how dark is that? Yeah, but at the same time, you've got this great comedy with Rory's ponytail and the way they're fighting the pensioners. Doesn't one climb up to a second-story window and Rory punches her in the face or something? She falls off the building. I seem to have that vision in my head for some reason. It's been a while since I've seen the episode. So it was very funny at the same time. I thought it was a really good episode.
Yeah. No, I remember some comedic moments when the Doctor, when they would pass out, there was always something like that was in my mind. I can't remember anything specific, but there are definitely comedic moments in that. Good stuff. Mm. Yeah. That was a good episode.
Alrighty. Shall we move on?
All right.
Where did you pick up this cheap cabaret act?
Me? Oh, you're on shaky ground.
Am I?
If you had any more tawdry quirks, you could open up a tawdry quirk shop. The madcap vehicle, the cockamamie hair, the clothes designed by a first-year fashion student. I'm surprised you haven't got a little purple space dog. Just to ram home what an intergalactic wag you are. Where was I?
You were...
I know where I was. So here's your challenge. Two worlds. Here, in the time machine, and there, in the village that time forgot. One is real, the other's fake. And just to make it more interesting, you're going to face, in both worlds, a deadly danger. But only one of the dangers is real. Tweet, tweet. Time to sleep. Oh. Or are you waking up?
All right, then, Lex, what have you got next?
All right. The Lodger.
Excellent choice.
Good. Yes.
It's not, not a bingo, though.
Okay. Well, I'll explain. okay. How do I summarize this episode for me? First of all, it's the comedy and the Doctor and James Gordon's interaction is something... It is just incredible. Like when they're trying to transmit the psychic memories of the head banging together, like the repeatedly head banging, healing. What's his actual name? Not James Gordon in the show. What's his name?
Craig. Yeah.
Healing Craig when he touches this, the rot. And he gets knocked out, and the Doctor puts together some kind of crazy tea potion and uses components from the trash. And just out of this teapot with Princess Diana and Charles. Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't know my royalty. King Charles. Am I getting this right?
Not yet.
Oh, shit.
He's still a prince.
Prince. Right. The queen. Okay. Pretend that didn't happen. Feeding them out of this teapot. It's a... adorably funny and disgusting at the same time. So yeah, I guess I like that bit. And what else can I say?
I like the soccer match.
Oh yeah. yeah, I appreciate this episode because we get to see a Doctor that can play soccer or football very well.
I was going to say, in real life, Matt Smith was quite a good football player. And I think it hurt his knee and that had stopped him sort of kicking on with it, you know, no pun intended. And he got to show some of those skills in this episode.
I think it was his back.
His back.
Yeah, spinal injury. yeah. But basically, yeah, same thing. What else? I'm looking at my notes. I think my other episode is kind of like this too, how romance saves the day. I love that. Mm-hmm. That was a wonderful love story in the background. Craig and Sophie? Yeah, Sophie. Mm-hmm. I don't know. They were the sweetest. So bashful and not able to say their feelings, and the doctor just kind of helps them out. Somehow the doctor is really good at relationships. Yeah. Somehow. Oh, a favorite line. Do you remember when Craig and the doctor first, it's like their first conversation, and he hands over the key to the doctor and says, you know, if you ever need some private time, or you ever bring over a girlfriend, or, and then he looks down and up and down, a boyfriend, you just let me know. And the doctor's like, I don't understand what you mean. But then he's like, oh, sure, yes, I will be sure to tell you, and I'll probably say something like, I was not expecting this! I love that so much. That's what I love. Matt Smith is so prone to just blurting out very loudly his very literal, nonsensical, I don't know, but perfect sense. Perfect nonsense sentiments.
Now,
Matt Smith.
I was going to say, assuming you haven't picked the follow-up story to this one, I can't think of its name, where he comes back and hangs out with Craig again, and there are Cybermen under the department store.
Yeah, so, the Cybermen one.
So long as you haven't picked that one as your next one, can we talk about that briefly, in the sense that did lightning strike twice when they redid this sort of storyline, or was this first version of it probably the better of the two?
I think this was definitely the better of the two. Because it wasn't... what are you talking, in the sense of what? Like, what are you using as the common denominator in this comparison here? In terms of what?
Well, he comes back and we have him and Craig again, and they're in the house. This time there's a baby, and they do the wacky stuff, and the doctor, I think, cleans the house at some stage. And isn't it funny, the doctor's, you know, living in real life. But it just sort of treads a lot of the same ground. I mean, there are some great lines in it, especially when the lady at the department store thinks Craig and the doctor are a gay couple, for example. There are some great lines in it.
So great. Yeah, I love that. It was hilarious. The episode is called Closing Time.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it just sort of largely retrod the same ground with some Cybermen in it.
Mm, yeah. I liked the Cybermen, although, for some reason, both of those episodes, The Lodger and Closing Time, the actual story of, battling the baddie wasn't all that impressive.
Mm.
Which, I don't know. I liked The Lodger in terms of battling the baddie. They did that better because they had those cool time loop effects. That was really neat. I don't know if you remember that. I kind of rewatched it recently and totally had forgotten about it. These time loops, it's very, very cool. And scary, unnerving. It was very cool. But yeah, the Cybermen story wasn't as good. So comparison, I'm going with The Lodger all the way. Romantically also. Although there is that family and the baby, and that's nice. But the first one was just a lot stronger.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that you followed it up, because the pair, the James Gordon and Matt Smith pair, is incredible. So that's, yeah, I could watch that again anytime.
And now, of course, you've got James Corden doing The Late Show over in the US, replacing, of course, Craig Ferguson, who was a big Doctor Who fan and was best mates with Peter Capaldi when they were growing up. Everything's connected, you know?
Yeah, no, I didn't know that, but that is so perfect. Yeah. I have watched Craig Ferguson. I like him a lot. Not only because he likes Doctor Who.
Yeah, and James Corden's his replacement. It's just so strange.
Or is it? Maybe it's on purpose. It's the Doctor Who connection.
I think so.
Let's go with that.
Alrighty, shall we move on?
Yep.
I want you to go. You can have this back and all.
What have I done?
For a start, talking to a cat.
Lots of people talk to cats.
And everybody loves you, and you're better at football than me, and my job, and now Sophie's all, oh, monkeys, monkeys, and then...
There's that! It's art. A statement on modern society. Ooh! Ain't modern society awful?
Me and you, it's not going to work out. You've only been here 3 days. It'd be the three weirdest days of my life.
Your days will get a lot weirder if I go.
What? It was good weird. It's not. It's bad weird. I can't do this anymore.
Meg, I can't leave this place. I'm like you. I can't see the point of anywhere else. Madrid? Ha! What a dump. I have to stay.
No, you don't. You have to leave.
I can't go.
Just get out!
Right. Only way, I'm going to show you something, but shh, really, shh. Oh, I'm going to regret this. Okay, right, first, general background.
You're a... Yes. From... You've got a turn.
Shh, yes, shh. 11th. Right, okay. Specific detail.
Amy! You saw my ad in the paper shop window!
Yes, with this right above it, which is odd. Because Amy hasn't written it yet. Time travel. It can happen.
That's a scanner! You've used non-technological technology of Lammerstein!
Okay, your turn.
Okay, also from Series 5, Vincent and the Doctor.
Okay, now I knew you were going to do this one, actually. Not just... I was certain on the 11th hour... But I probably should have gone with that one. That is an excellent episode. And normally, I'm not making you a generalization, I guess. Or not trying to. But, I mean, everybody loves that episode. Let's be honest.
Yeah, it's a very different kind of episode. Obviously, through the writing and the fact that the monster is largely inconsequential. Although we did mention the monster was sort of inconsequential to the last two stories as well. That we were mentioning Closing Time and The Lodger.
But at least it was kind of unusual. Wait, no, not really. Creature that needs help. We've had that many times. I don't know. It felt kind of different somehow. I mean, he was invisible. Has that happened often? With Hyde?
Oh, well, there's the Tom Baker episode, The Invisible Enemy. I mean, there's a way to save budget on an enemy.
Yeah, right? I'm going to rewind and just say, yeah, so the storyline of fighting the baddie again wasn't all that impressive. Not the smartest or cleverest, but carry on.
I mean, I was thinking about this episode last night when I was making a few notes, and I thought, this is precisely the kind of thing you'd want to do if you had a time machine. You know, to go back to famous people in time, obviously, but also in cases where they weren't famous in their time, like Vincent certainly wasn't. Or maybe they were successful and sort of well-known, but nothing like the success they have today, you know, when we shower big kudos on people from hundreds of years ago for things they did. You know, I don't think they were necessarily that famous back in their time. They've sort of become more famous over time. And, and to have a time machine and to go back to these people and say, hey, you know, you're sort of famous in this city because you discovered something, but... In the future, everyone knows about you and everyone types into Wikipedia your name and they know all about you and they think you're a genius. And wouldn't you just love to say that to some people?
Yeah. Yeah. I guess, yes. And you've said this before. I love how I think Doctor Who should do it more often. They went back and actually an actual historical figure for us let us... Because I don't know, Doctor Who should be more about history. That's how it started off, and they've kind of forgotten about that. I'm glad you picked this one for that reason. And yes, I would love to go back in time and tell a historical figure how important they are. Yes. Be a part of that, yeah.
I mean, you've touched on something interesting there, the fact that Doctor Who did begin with a lot of historicals. It was the meaning of the show to teach kids history.
Yeah, it had so much potential.
And now we have, like, pseudo-historicals, where they're back in time, they meet real historical people, but there's always some sort of alien menace at the same time.
Right, yeah, yeah.
I don't understand why they couldn't do a pure historical.
Yeah.
You know, it's the kind of thing which I think the audience is smart enough to understand, and it's the kind of thing which I think would be shocking enough because they just don't do it anymore to have a purely historical kind of thing and have a baddie who is just a bad guy from back in time and not like an alien in disguise or under the possession of, you know, a mystical force or something.
Yeah, that would be so interesting. Refreshing as well.
But this episode, I mean, if you haven't had your emotional strings given a good yank by the end, I don't think you're human, you know.
It's... No, no. If you don't cry, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
You need to have some more contact with the doctor, and he'll fix you up. Watch some more Doctor Who. You haven't watched enough yet.
And I know in saying that, and when I watch the episode and at the end where Vincent's looking around the gallery at everyone marvelling at his paintings, yeah. I know it's reaching out and it's tugging on the heartstrings going, ha ha, I'm going to make you cry now. And yeah. And you almost don't want to because you know that's what it's trying to do, like in a movie where the music will swell in a particular way and you can feel it rising up inside you and you're like, oh no, don't do this to me.
Yeah, the music is just mocking you.
That's exactly right. And but I can't not like it. It's just great, this episode. Fantastic.
Yeah, the actor they got for Vincent, I think, has a big part to do with it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I don't know his name, but he's an excellent actor. At one point, I knew his name. I have a bad name remembrance issue thing going on in my brain at the moment, so.
Oh, you can send me off on a whole tangent here with regard to Doctor Who in particular. When it comes to the classic era, I can remember guest stars, directors, producers, all sorts of stuff, you know, from 40 years ago. And it's because when I was like 11, 12 years old, my mind was like a sponge and I would read these books and everything just went in there. Yeah. I can watch Doctor Who a week ago, you know, a modern story, and not be able to tell you who wrote it, who directed it, who the guest stars were, and anything about it. And it's weird. I think it's just an age thing. I think you
that's
just...
not good. Yeah, an age thing. Well, I could, you know, offer some assistance for your defense, your brain's defense. Maybe it's, we're just totally bombarded with lots of information these days. Maybe it's not your age. I mean, there's a lot going around.
Oh.
A lot of information all the time that we're just thrown with, so you can't blame your brain.
That's
my excuse, too.
That is an excellent point, actually, in fandoms like Doctor Who and Star Wars. You think back to the classic era of Doctor Who or Star Wars in the early 80s, and all I had to know was there were three Star Wars movies. That was it. And I could just watch them over and over and over, and I knew everything about Star Wars. And similarly with Doctor Who, every season at the time, there would be, say, six stories or something, comprising 24, 26 episodes. And you could get to know them very well, you know. But now, yes, there's... The show on TV, there's the Big Finish audios, there's mm-hmm. books just coming out of our ears all the time, there's other audios through the BBC now, there's, you know, the fan-created stuff.
The mini little shows, remember, like The Pawn's Life, that stuff?
Yes, yep. Yeah.
They're good.
The volume of stuff is greater now, so yeah, that actually might come into it too, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, I think so.
Okay.
What else can we say about Vincent and the Doctor? I loved all the sunflowers. That was a beautiful... They used the artistic element very well.
Mm.
It was pleasing to the eye.
Yeah, it's beautifully shot. I mean, kudos to the director, whoever they were. Obviously, yeah. I can't remember because it's a modern Doctor Who story. You know, when they're lying in the field with their heads together, looking up at the sky... I can barely not cry looking at that scene.
Yeah, it's so... Like, Vincent was such a troubled guy, and it's just that pure moment of, I don't know, being, I don't know, kind of complete and in peace, sort of, that, I don't know, the doctor, he kind of fixed him up. It was a beautiful moment. Mm-hmm. And the sky turning into the painting, that's what I'm talking about, the eye candy was just so pretty.
Yeah, and underpinning it is the tragedy, though, because you're watching it and thinking, yes, the doctor is helping him in some way. Well, I think Amy might even be helping him more, because I think he's quite keen on Amy. But you know that they're not going to change time, that Vincent is still going to, you know, end things. And that's tragic. Because you're watching him have such a good time and you're watching him be healed in some ways, but you know it's still not going to end well.
Yeah. Yeah, it really tugs on the heartstrings. Mm. And the writers of Doctor Who knew it too. I think they brought him back for the Big Bang, the finale, for a reason. He really stuck in our hearts.
Yeah.
Vincent and the Doctor is an excellent episode, so I'm glad you picked that one, because that would have been a shame if neither of us had picked it.
Yeah. Yeah.
A shame.
Shall we move on?
Yeah, I think so.
Mr. Black. Yeah. We met a few days ago. I asked you about the church and a verse.
Oh, yes. Glad to be of help. You were nice about my tie.
Yes. And today is another cracker, if I may say so. But I just wondered, between you and me, in 100 words, where do you think Van Gogh rates in the history of art?
Well, big question. But to me, Van Gogh is the finest painter of the moment. Certainly the most popular great painter of all time. The most beloved. His command of colour, the most magnificent. He transformed the pain of his tormented life into ecstatic beauty. Pain is easy to portray, but to use your passion and pain to portray the ecstasy and joy and magnificence of our world, no one had ever done it before. Perhaps no one ever will again. To my mind, that strange, wild man who roamed the fields of Provence was not only the world's greatest artist, but also one of the greatest men who ever lived.
Vincent, sorry.
I'm sorry, is it too much?
No, they are tears of joy. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Sorry about the beard.
This is my final one. I'm now into season 6. Is that okay?
I'm in 6 also. I have the episode I'd like to talk about. I also have a runner-up. So don't know whether you want to do yours and then we'll do my runner-up. Not that we should really talk about it because it's only a runner-up.
Oh, I think we should. You can't just pick 3 episodes.
You mean 4?
Well, 4 even. Yes. A top 10, maybe, each of us would have been more appropriate. It's so there's so many good episodes in this era.
I'm suitably chastened. I'll mention my runner-up at the very, very end.
Good. Right.
After you.
Okay. That's funny that neither of us picked a Series 7 episode. Because those were good, too. But anyways, I picked another tearjerker. A real sudser. Christmas Carol.
No bingo.
No bingo. Silence. Cricket, cricket. or Jingle Bells. Let's go with the Jingle Bells. This was such a good Christmas episode. I don't know. It made me cry. Mm. So I went with that. And also it was romantic.
Yes.
I guess I also went with that again. I don't know. Okay, I picked The Christmas Carol because, it's an excellent Matt Smith episode just for that entrance of his first entrance in the episode. He comes down this chimney.
Blimey, sorry, Christmas Eve on a rooftop, saw a chimney, my whole brain just went, what the hell?
Yes, Matt Smith, the character, 11th Doctor, that's just him, it was so perfect. So that's why, number one, this episode, just for that entrance. I picked The Christmas Carol.
Can I jump in at this point and say it's my favorite of the Christmas episodes?
Yeah. Okay, good. It really is. It's such a well-written Christmas episode. Really, I think they made it special, not just because it's not easy to do this. It's difficult. They used a really well-known Christmas time story, because everybody's done that, sure, but so that it takes some effort to make it special, and they added like a darkness to it that most other episodes wouldn't have. So this was sort of like a sad, dark Christmas. Like I was thinking when watching it recently, that quote in the beginning of Kazran talking to the Scrooge character, he says like halfway out of the dark, meaning Christmas, you're halfway out of the dark. That really resonated, I thought, as in terms of the whole episode, the theme, not a Christmas feeling you usually get from stories. They're not usually that dark. And I don't know, but it's really special.
Yeah. But, I when I watched this, I was over the moon because the Christmas stories hadn't been entirely sitting right with me up until this one. And then I thought this is perfect because they're taking this old story that, you're right, everyone does, but they throw in the Doctor Who twist of, mm-hmm. you know, being shown different things through time travel, mm-hmm. and then you throw in that romance element with, I think, Catherine Jenkins is the actress. That name sticks in my head for some reason.
Yeah, that's her.
And that song she sings at the end is just incredible, you know.
And it really resonated with me also because my mom is a choir director.
Oh.
Yeah, so if you want to melt my heart, you just have to add in some choral pieces and I'm gone, a puddle.
Listeners, take note.
I was numbed. It was just, I cried. I cried so much. It was so beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. and the fun scenes of them going through time to marry Marilyn Monroe at one stage.
Yeah. The 11th Doctor almost marries. Did marry? Uncertain. The 11th Doctor probably married Marilyn Monroe in this episode. We actually saw the Doctor with an untied tie, an mm-hmm. untied bow tie, with a red stain of lipstick on his cheek. That actually happened.
and even, I think there's a scene where, do they have some snapshots from other adventures? It's a really quick way of showing that they've been to other places as well.
Frank Sinatra. Oh, right. Yeah, not with the Kazrin and Abigail characters. Yeah, those were not.
Yeah, because I want to say there's an Australian shot in there. I almost think there's an opera house or a harbour bridge or...
Yes, there is. I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, there we are. which I do whenever Australia is in Doctor Who, like even in, what's Eccleston's penultimate story? Bad Wolf. And the Daleks are attacking the world and the world starts melting. But you can see Australia. And I go, there we are, we're melting. But we made it.
Yep, that episode was for you.
Yeah, I get funny when I see Australia in TV shows. What else can we say about this? We mentioned the music, the Christmas Carol theme.
The beautiful fish floating around, the clouds, so cool.
Yeah, wasn't that a concept?
The big shark, yeah, that was quite a concept, yes. Yeah, being able to control the weather. And then, of course, there was the big spaceship. So it wasn't entirely unspacey. They did manage to somehow make it spacey-ish as well, you know? A spacey Christmas with Fitch.
Yes. It's bizarre. And there is another element to this episode which makes me happy. I'm going to say it, but it probably won't make you happy when I say it.
What?
And it will make people at home... question two of my three episode choices. One of them you haven't heard yet. Okay, it's this. Amy is barely in the episode.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's I've both of the ones that I've picked, the last two, Amy isn't in the episode. I noticed that. Yeah. Funny. Interesting, right?
Because I'm not the biggest Amy fan, and yet I've picked Amy's choice.
Yeah.
And the episode you hear from me next, you'll go, oh, that's very Amy. Yet I'm not into the character at all. And so I actually really like that she was stuck up on that ship.
You guys, yeah. No, it's fun. Somehow the Doctor, the 11th Doctor, really shines when he's alone interacting with new characters. He really does. He does. Yeah. But, you know, and you once asked me who my favorite companion was. And I said, I should have said Amy Pond. She really is, I think, my favorite. And I don't think I was able to say it because there's so many flaws in her character, how she never actually, like, she really doesn't return Rory's affection. It's so unequal. And I think that really bothers me. But otherwise, she's so crazy. I really do really like her as a companion. I just want to add that in there to clear my conscience. And I know you're not she's not your favorite, but I love Amy Pond.
Well, that's good.
I know. It is good. Now my conscience is cleared and I'm honest.
We all have to have our favorites.
Yes. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So what were we just... you were just introducing maybe something else? Another pick of yours? Was that what we were talking about?
Well, we can move on to that. I was only mentioning it because I'm saying how I don't like Amy, and yet two of my three choices are very Amy-centric.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. When you are here, music is all around. When you are near, music is all around. Open your eyes, don't make a sound. It's in the shadow. It's in the shadow. It's in the light of your bright shadow. It's in the shadow. It's in the shadow. It's in the light of your bright shadow.
I wonder if people at home can guess what I'm going to pick.
Is it the Girl Who Waits?
Yes.
Woo! I win! What do I win?
Bragging rights. Let's move on to The Girl Who Waited then.
Yeah.
For me, for a show about time travel, the concept is often used really sparingly in Doctor Who. Like, they use it to go to a place, but it's not the underlying theme of what's happening, if that makes sense.
Say that again.
Doctor Who is about time travel. He's a time traveller.
Hmm.
They use the TARDIS to go places in time, but the concept of time and manipulating time and things you can do with time aren't really a concept that's used that much in the show.
Oh, okay. You know, in this episode, let me refresh my memory because I haven't seen this one. I think it bothered me so much that they were basically killing Amy Pond, that I haven't been able to rewatch this one.
Maybe
so
that's why I like it.
Yeah, maybe that's why you like it.
On a subconscious level.
Killer! Companion killer! Anyways, sorry. Yes, what do? They put her in another dimension and she ages and they're not able to get to her because of some kind of block that has to do with time. Wait, what is... Can you explain it to me? Give me a refresher on this episode.
It's been a while since I've seen it, and you've probably explained it almost as well as I could.
Okay.
They end up at some place. They step through a mirror. I recall there was a mirror. They were looking through a mirror. And Amy and Rory were together, but then got separated. Rory ended up back with the Doctor, and they were trying to get back to Amy. They thought they got back to her in pretty good time, but when they got back to her, she was... what, 30 years older or something.
Surprise! Yeah.
Mm. And Rory wasn't too keen, I think, on having a 50-year-old, so they left her behind, and she died. The end.
Yeah, basically. They killed her. They killed that version of her.
I'm being facetious about a story I really like. You know, I mean, her survival in that place for such a long period of time was maybe drawing the bow a little too far. Like, I didn't understand where she was getting food, and she was largely wearing the same clothes. I was thinking, ooh, that'd be a bit whiffy by now.
Yeah, I thought that too. Yeah. But somehow she's very innovative and so very not innovative at the same time.
Yeah.
Can't find another pair of clothes.
And she becomes awesome with a samurai sword, which is,
yeah,
you know, pure fan service, but it was a great scene where she's running to make it back to the TARDIS. She's being attacked. Mm-hmm. She's slicing robots in half. It's slow motion, as I recall.
It's so, her character so naturally went into that kick-ass, killer, fight machine, samurai wielding.
Well, she is Scottish.
She's Scottish.
Have you met many Scottish women? Jeez.
No, I haven't. I'd be deprived.
But what do I like about this? I like that the concept is so brutal. You know, there's the old Amy, she's there at the TARDIS. I think she's looking from side to side. She's thinking the door's going to open. And then the decision's made that they're going to leave her there and keep the young Amy. I'm not sure how they got a hold of a young Amy as well. I'm sort of confused on that now in my head. I might have to go back and rewatch it. But
yeah, some kind of timey-wimey thing to do with the TARDIS. Some fancy trick.
We're going to keep this Amy who none of this happened to, and that Amy out there is not going to exist. And you think, well, that's okay on one level, because Amy still exists, but this fragment of Amy, who is a real sentient thinking person, is about to just melt away into nothing.
Yeah, an identity.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's real. They killed her.
Yeah.
It was brutal. Brutal is the perfect word, really. It is. And, yeah, respect. That's why we watch Doctor Who, for that mind-opening brutalness sometimes. That's why we read literature. That's why we have drama. Well, you got to take it.
Well, precisely, the word drama is huge in this, because it's drama. It's not, we've got young Amy and old Amy, I'm going to wave the sonic screwdriver, and old Amy, you can live there forever because I've done something magical. And, look, I've made another Rory, and he can live with you too. And, isn't this great? We've had a great time, and everyone's happy. You know, it's no. This Amy is going to just disappear. It's brutal as hell, but it's real. And I wish, particularly in episodes, I won't single out any other episodes from, Doctor Who of recent years, but they sometimes do things that are a little too magical and just a little too, we're just trying to give this a really sweet ending, when it doesn't need it. And in fact, the drama would be enhanced if they just did more brutal things to people, and if people stayed dead when you kill them, and so on. I could talk about that for another hour.
I know, but that's why we have shows like Game of Thrones.
true.
They could incorporate that more, true. I like how they do it, though. I don't know. It's so rare. I feel like it's a huge trend that everybody's just making brutal television dramas now. And Doctor Who is sort of alone. And yeah, maybe it's becoming less popular because of it, because they always give us that happy ending a lot of the time. But God, I'm all for it. I'm just old. I'm showing.
Not as old as me. I'll be 40 in a week's time.
Yes, I guess. Yes.
I'm but ancient.
I live in a world of Buffy the Vampire Slayer and all that campy stuff. So that's where I'm coming from. And it's vastly different from what's now on TV. What's currently being written. It is. It's a culture change.
It is. And now that you bring it up, because I lived through Buffy and I've kind of left that behind years ago now, not in the sense that I no longer care about it, but I just watched it a long time ago.
Yeah.
Whereas you've watched it probably more recently than me and can perhaps see the difference between it and modern television. And that's a really interesting thing to point out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's sort of recent. And yes, I definitely noticed it. And I buy into it. Like, I do. I get it. I'm part of this culture, too. It's just, so different to be. I'm a part of my identity. I identify myself so much with the television I watch, I guess. I'm having an internal identity crisis. It's interesting. Anyway, so that's another discussion. We're playing a game here.
Well, you've given your three and I've given my three, and we didn't get bingo on any of them.
No! I'm kind of disappointed.
But at the same time, it's kind of good. It shows that there is such diversity in the Matt Smith era. It's not like when you talk about, say, the Fifth Doctor era and say, give me three episodes that you like. Caves of Androzani would be one of them for everyone. Or when you look at other Doctor's eras, there are just episodes that everyone likes. Whereas here, we've picked stuff, and I think with each other's choices, we've both gone, oh, yeah, that is a good one.
Yeah.
You know, I could have picked that one.
It's because you told us only to pick three.
Well, as we head towards the hour mark, it was probably a good idea to only pick three each.
Well, yeah. It worked out. This was fun.
I guess that just leaves my runner-up. And to be fair, I'd love to give you a runner-up as well, if there was something you really, really, you know, loved but couldn't include.
Sure, I'll take that up. Okay. So, yes. What's your runner-up?
My runner-up is The Doctor's Wife.
Ah, I was hoping you would pick that one too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it was beautiful. Oh, it was so great to actually have a humanoid version of the TARDIS.
Mm-hmm.
She was excellent. I don't know who she is, but so good.
Her name is Suran Jones. And yes, she made it. Another actor or actress I don't think, you know, might have done as well.
No. She has a real ability to talk fast. It was very Doctor-ish. It definitely just kind of a component of the Doctor. They were one. It was such a perfect matchup. She encompassed the TARDIS and Doctor mentality perfectly.
And the way she looked too, in some scenes she looks old, in some scenes she looks young. I couldn't quite get a feel for the actress behind the role. And that made her interesting to look at as the character of the TARDIS.
Yeah, I guess that's an interesting and important trait. To be in that role. Yeah, to be kind of ageless.
And the clothes she was wearing, obviously the clothes are the clothes that the person in the story was wearing before they became the TARDIS, before they died and, you know, the TARDIS entered their soul or whatever that was supposed to be all about. But that old-fashioned dress sort of suited what the TARDIS might wear.
It did, and it was blue. It was blue.
Other concepts in it, the TARDIS junkyard, those message cubes. I can't hardly believe that it's not in my top three, but it's just not.
For some reason, I don't know. It was perfect, really, though.
Yeah.
I can't think of any criticism at the moment.
I was going to say, it gave me such high hopes for when Neil Gaiman came back to do Nightmare in Silver, but I didn't like that half as much as The Doctor's Wife.
No, yeah, that episode was weird. The Doctor's Wife was really something special. I learned the word petrichor from that episode.
Well, that's something.
Yes. Yeah, the smell of dust after rain. I'm glad you mentioned that one. Somebody had to as well.
We are in your universe now, Doctor. Why should it matter to me in which room you die? I can kill you just as easily here as anywhere. Fear me. I've killed hundreds of Time Lords.
Fear me. I've killed all of them.
I don't understand. There isn't a forest in here.
Yeah. You're right. You've completely won. Oh, you could kill us in oodles of really inventive ways. But before you do, killers, allow me and my friends, Amy and Rory, to congratulate you on being an absolutely worthy opponent.
Congratulations.
Yep, you've defeated us, me and my lovely friends here. And last, but definitely not least, the TARDIS Matrix herself, a living consciousness you ripped out of this very control room and locked up into a human body. And look at her.
Doctor, she stopped breathing.
Enough. That is enough.
No, it's never enough. You forced the TARDIS into a body so she'd burn out safely a very long way away from this control room. Her flesh body can't hold the TARDIS Matrix and live. Look at her body house.
And you think I should mourn her?
No. I think you should be very, very careful about what you let back into this control room. You took her from her home, but now she's back in the box again. And she's free.
No. Doctor, stop this.
Look at my girl. Look at her go.
Finger on the inside. See how?
Stop.
That's your problem. The size of a planet, but inside you are just so small.
Make it stop.
Finish him off, girl.
And I was was going to mention The Big Bang, because that episode, as mind-boggling as it was, was really incredible. So much happened. Everybody nearly dies, mm-hmm. or practically does die, and they all get back to life. And that the metaphor for the wedding, the something old, something blue, something borrowed, the TARDIS, it was just a perfect interweaving of worlds and the circumstance, and of course, like, just the love for the Doctor and Amy and Rory finally getting married. It was the perfect ending for a season. They wound it up so well. They built it up really well. I don't know. I had to mention that, the Big Bang.
There's a crack in time in the wall of your bedroom, and it's been eating away at your life for a long time now. Amy Pond, all alone. A girl who didn't make sense. How could I resist?
How could I just forget?
Nothing is ever forgotten. Not really. But you have to try.
Doctor! It's speeding up!
There's going to be a very big bang two. Try and remember your family and they'll be there.
How can I remember them if they never exist?
Because you're special. Crack in your wall that time. The universe pouring into your head. You brought Rory back, you can bring them back too. You just remember. And they'll be there.
You won't.
You'll have your family back.
You won't need your imaginary friend anymore.
Amy Pond. Crying over me, eh? Guess what?
What?
Gotcha.
I would have loved if Amy and Rory left at that point.
Oh, yeah. That could have been, yeah. But season six, we've mentioned a couple of episodes in season six that, well, I guess you killed Amy in one of your choices, and I chose A Christmas Carol in which they don't actually really appear. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it says something. Yeah, you're right. It could have been a good ending. Yes.
Yeah. It's just I always bang on about it. I just love to see doctors with different companions. And if a modern doctor these days only lasts 3 years or 3.5 years or whatever, to use a companion across two or three series, it's like, no, show him with someone else, you know? It was that way with Amy in the 11th, and it's becoming that way with Clara and Capaldi.
Oh, well, coming that way? That is so overdue. But for the Amy and Rory, Amy really is my favorite companion. I never got really sick of her. But yeah, I pointed out today the 11th Doctor really shines when he's introduced to new characters. And same with the 12th. I think that goes with most Doctors that I can think of. The 9th, yes. David Tennant.
Yeah, from a behind-the-scenes point of view, it shows actors having someone new to bounce off, someone different, sort of, you know, ooh, okay, I've got to react differently to this person. And it makes things sparkle, you know. I think when actors get into their characters too much, it becomes maybe like an old pair of slippers, and, you know, Capaldi slips into Capaldi mode, and, you know, Jenna slips into Clara mode, and it's just, you know, it's not as sparkling as if it was someone new and different there.
Yeah, yeah, somehow.
You know, I was going to say, you think of the Beatles recording Let It Be, how's this for a tangent? And, you know, they're fighting and they're not getting along, and then one of them decides to get in Billy Preston, the keyboardist, who does, like, the big keyboard solo in Get Back, and he put everyone on their best behaviour, and everyone wanted to impress Billy, and everyone started getting along, you know. You see the same in offices when, you know, someone new comes in for the day from another office, and everyone is suddenly on their best behaviour, you know. There's a sparkle when new people are around in all sorts of situations, let alone, you know, TV roles.
Right, yeah, good analogies.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, yeah. They have to have that balance. They, and I don't know. So far, I think they do need a change. Less companion, less Clara.
Yeah, well, with the news that Moffat will stay until the end of season 10,
yeah,
I'm starting to wonder whether he's going to leave at the same time, maybe as Capaldi. Will Clara stay on for another season after this one? I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, she was saying she was going to leave so many times and didn't.
Yeah.
Surely this has got to be a change coming up at the end of series 9.
Probably just a couple episodes. That's what I'm thinking. That's what they should do. And I think the best of the Doctor Who writers. In my mind, that's how it's going to go down. Just a couple episodes.
Anyway, we're getting onto the Capaldi era now, and we should really stick to Smith.
I guess. But also, Series 9 is almost here.
It is. It is. And we'll be doing some interesting things on Who Wars, but I just can't say what yet.
Secrets.
Very secret. All right. In summary, I mean, we've given a little summary, but do you have anything else to say about the Matt Smith era?
Matt Smith era. We could summarize what makes Matt Smith so special.
Okay. What makes him special for you?
His kookiness. I like how he incorporates some of the old, like, Patrick Troughton. I mentioned that earlier. You know, the ability to be very serious about something that makes absolutely no sense, and yet at the same time does make sense. And his range of being so convincing and motivating, and also hilarious, and maybe has a bit of an attitude also. There's just a huge range that goes with him, and he can play football. I think I'm done. Yeah.
Okay. For me, I was worried when he got the role. I thought he was so young, which is weird because my doctor, the fifth doctor, was previously the youngest man to play the role himself. So it wasn't without precedent that I already liked young doctors, but I was worried. But a few episodes in, I sort of got where he was going, and I really went with it. And I thought, this guy's surprising, you know, in a good way.
Surprising, yes. He was always surprising, yeah.
And even when some storylines didn't sparkle, he still sparkled. And the way he delivered the lines, he was still giving it all he had. And I can respect that.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of respect. He will be missed. He is missed.
He is missed. He is for sure. Alrighty. What about you at home? What are your favourite 11th Doctor stories and why? Why not write in to hello@whowars.net and tell us, or even record an MP3 and send that to us instead? I'm sure I'd be happy to listen to that, as would Lex.
I would be. We missed out a lot of favorite episodes here. I know you guys have them.
Exactly. So get them in.
Well, that wraps it up for another episode of Who Wars. If you'd like to be in touch with the show, simply email hello@whowars.net. Find us on Twitter @WhoWars, or if Facebook's more your thing, at facebook.com/WhoWars. Oh, and don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. See you next time.
Alrighty, I think we're good.
I think so too. That was fun.